This is where they are building the largest nuclear fusion reactor in the world.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me I had to check out this pool.
America on Main Street and at the dinner table is talking about infrastructure when 20 years ago, they didn't even know what that meant.
Today, those towers are an astounding display of wealth, prestige, and engineering firsts.
It's impacting everyday Americans.
I am against the train. The way it's being done right now.
New York City housing is a scam. It is a scam.
The Shard in central London is being officially opened today, and at 310 metres tall, it's Europe's newest and tallest skyscraper.
Hello, I'm Fred Mills.
And this is the world's best construction podcast
by the B1M.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the World's Best Construction Podcast. I'm your host, Fred, and as always, I'm joined by Luke and Liam. The whole crew are back together this week, guys. It's exciting. After a bit of a hiatus, all three of us are back on the same podcast. If you're one of our regular listeners, I know it's been a hard couple of weeks, but I'm back now.
You've been away, mate, haven't you? You've been away in Malaysia, where it's been a bit warm.
Yep, just a casual hop to the other side of the world. It was amazing. Amazing place. Yeah. KL is an incredible city, and hottest I've ever been. I know I listened to last week's episode. I know you're going to be saying I was going to complain about the weather, but unreal. It's like being in a steam room, fully dressed.
Really?
Yeah.
Mate, what was it like? 40s felt like 40 Celsius, right? That's not
felt
Fahrenheit.
Felt like 47 Celsius, which is about 116 Fahrenheit.
Oh, mate, nah. No. And how did you get on with the food? That's what I wanted to know, mate. How did you get on with the food?
It was all right, mate. It was all right. I dived in. So I had some nasi lemak, which was really good. Tried ostrich one night.
What? Liam's skeptical.
I did. It was lovely.
Proof. You need proof?
I did.
I messaged Fred and I said, mate, you better be eating some of the key sort of traditional dishes over there. And he's, I'd like to see proof, mate.
Well, I didn't take photographs of me eating food, Liam. That's just weird. there was toast at the breakfast conveyor belt. I did have a bit of toast from the toast conveyor belt. So,
yeah.
Did you get into any chili?
No, I don't really do spicy food.
Oh, fair enough.
What have you guys been eating? What? Oh, that's right. You both lead boring lives and haven't been on a corporate.
Oh, get out. Get out, mate. Get out.
No, it's cool. It was an amazing trip. It's an amazing country. It's hot, but when you put the heat aside, the energy, the vibrancy was incredible. And obviously, I was over there with the team to film Madeca 118, which is the second tallest building in the world. I've never seen a building that big. I haven't seen the Burj Khalifa. So to stand, literally, our hotel was right next to you, as you guys saw, the ridiculously tall, I think 678 meters, 680 meters building. Yeah. It's just insane. It's absolutely massive.
Yeah, your Instagram stories were amazing, mate. They looked absolutely superb. Looks like a cool city. Do you think it's like an underrated travel destination for people like this side of the world? Like, I don't hear of many people going from like Europe.
Yeah, well, it's a long way, first of all.
Right,
it's
of course.
But I think it is quite a departure from Europe and what most of us in Europe are kind of used to. Like, it's very energetic. There's massive amounts of diversity and culture. There's a lot going on. But then you have like quite poor areas and more sort of run down buildings right next to massive new glass skyscrapers. Like, it's a real mix of stuff going on, which is fascinating. But yeah, it's unlike anywhere I've been before. It's closest, I don't know what Liam thinks of this, but for me, it was kind of closest to Bangkok in a way. It had that sort of vibe. Very different to Singapore, very different to Hong Kong.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong in saying that, but.
Yeah. I see what you mean, mate. I think for like travel and things, I think, you know, if you're going to travel that way, I think most Europeans are probably going to go to Thailand or Indonesia and things like that because you've got beaches. Although, what? Malaysia's got like Penang and things. They've got some amazing islands. I reckon, probably similar to Bangkok, mate. Sort of has that similar kind of vibe. I haven't been to KL in a few years, so, and I was in Bangkok recently. Bangkok kind of surprised me of all the sort of upscale restaurants and speakeasy cocktail bars everywhere, and high fashion malls and things like that. And I remember KL being similar to that, but yeah, it's a good comparison. It's really hot, hey. Like, Asian cities are so hot. When I was in Bangkok, it was like same thing, like 36 degrees, feels like 40 something. I was just like, this is, unless you're in aircon, like it's like a hair dryer in your face just constantly.
Try doing it skinny jeans, mate.
Yeah, I knew. I was going to ask about your jeans. I saw you wearing skinny jeans.
Jeggings. Well, we had to. So as part of the, we didn't have to wear skinny jeans, but as part of the rules, you had to have your legs covered on the site. On the first day, I got back to my hotel room and just literally peeled them off my skin. They were, they'd fused with my legs. Other thing I did check out, just to throw this in, talking about nice air-conditioned spaces in Asian cities, the Tun Razak Exchange in Kuala Lumpur is absolutely incredible. We've covered it a few times on the B1M, but it is like Westfield on speed. Like, it's just like they've cranked it up to 50, and it looks really good. Beautiful.
That's interesting, man. I always notice that when I go to Asia, a lot of the malls and things is where people hang out. It's where the good restaurants are. It's obviously where the shops are, but it's like a place for people to socialize and hang out and things. I find that quite interesting because here for me in Australia, I'm like, I only go to the shopping center if I need to either go to the movies or, you know, buy some, like, I don't know, buy some shorts and t-shirts, clothes or something like that. But there it's like, you go there, and it's probably because something to do with the weather, right? Because you go there, and it's all aircon. It's all super cool in there. So everyone's just sort of in there escaping the heat.
So we went in because, like, we're filming some stuff outside, but when the sun hits you, when the sun comes out full bore, it is insane, literally. Like, all you can think is, how do I get out of this situation as quickly as possible? You're looking for shade. You're looking for somewhere to get indoors. So we wandered into the Tun Razak Exchange, and we're hit with this, like, Arctic breeze of air conditioning, which is absolutely incredible as you walk in. But we're like, you know, three sweaty guys from the UK with some filming kit. And you walk in and there's like, it's Gucci, Dior, Yves Saint Laurent, Hugo Boss, Fendi. All it is high-end brands. So we sort of staggered through all that and found somewhere reasonable to eat, which was good. Not ridiculously expensive.
McDonald's. Did you check out the Petronas Towers?
I did, mate. What a beautiful set of buildings.
They're cool, aren't they?
They're beautiful. Really cool. What struck me, right, is they are beautiful. I've never seen them before in the flesh or in the steel, if you like. but I wouldn't have thought they were once the world's tallest buildings. They look big, but they're not. They look a bit surrounded by other stuff now in KL. And when you're in Madeka 118, and I went to the very top of Madeka 118, when you're in that looking down, they are way below you. They are small buildings off on the side, like
it's like little gherkins.
Little cocktail gherkins.
We got a skyscrapery episode today, haven't we?
How about that? Mr. Bly. This week we're talking about Saudi Arabia's 2 kilometer skyscraper proposal, a video that came out on the B1M on Monday. Then slightly lesser in terms of height, but equally impressive, plans for Manchester's new tallest building. And the vessel is due to reopen in New York. Whole thing, as ever, is going to be sprinkled with plenty of discussion, banter, messages, and some of your comments from the week. Let's do it. Let's get cracking. Let's go. So, first of this week, we are talking about Saudi Arabia's plans for a 2 kilometer skyscraper. Now, news broke in Architects Journal back on the 4th of March, 2024, that Saudi Arabia was working on a 2 kilometer tall new skyscraper. It's being developed by Foster and Partners and is set to rise near the Saudi Arabian capital, Riyadh. Now, according to sources, again, we don't know which sources these are, whether it was ketchup or mayonnaise. I don't think it means that. I think it means people sources, it's understood that SOM, Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, and a few other international design names were also in the running. But this project apparently is due to sit close to the King Khalid International Airport, north of the Saudi capital. Now, Foster and Partners is already working on that airport. They're also working on, I think, 3 other airports now in Saudi Arabia. So they're doing a lot of work in Saudi, old Foster and Partners. Why would you build a 2 kilometer skyscraper close to an airport is just one of the questions we're going to be diving into in this episode of the World's Best Construction Podcast. But this video we brought out yesterday on the B1M, sorry, not yesterday, on Monday this week. You can tell which day we're recording now, can't you? It featured Chris and Vinny from ARAP. So Chris was an associate director of building services and Vinny was an associate in the architecture side. So we kind of got their input analysis in the video, which was quite good. But in this episode of the podcast, we kind of want to dive into what they talked about and have a general open discussion about how the heck one would build a 2 kilometer skyscraper in the desert. Why? How? Have they lost all their senses? What do we think, guys? Oh, where do you start,
mate,
right?
Mate.
After the line, I think this is this marketing spiel to get investment up, to get interest up. But if it's not, can you imagine what that penthouse would look like? That'd be insane.
Wouldn't be able to see the bottom, mate. Wouldn't be able to see the bottom. I don't know.
Yeah. If it's a cloudy day, you wouldn't be able to see anything.
No.
Or you'd be above the clouds, surely.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Wow. Like, you wouldn't be able to see the bottom, the ground, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot of comments on this about the line being cut back. Obviously, the line, in case you didn't know, guys, has gone from 170 kilometers to 2.5 kilometers by 2030. I was thinking that's like me saying I'm going to go for a 10k run, getting 100 meters in and being like, yeah,
smash that.
Gonna walk next. A bit now. It's exactly the same as that. So who knows? I mean, the Jeddah Tower, as we know, currently stands about 300 meters. It's a stump. They were going for 1,000 meters, ended up as 300 meters. And I think the developer's gone bust. This one, I should say, is being backed by the Saudi Arabian State-Owned Public Investment Fund, or PIF. Our favourite friends who are behind NEOM and other crazy projects like the Macabre, Trojena, ski resorts in the desert, you know, all that kind of stuff. What was the guy from The Simpsons where he's like, hey, everybody, you may remember me from such crazy projects as the Macabre.
Dr. Nick, mate. Dr. Nick. That's like programmed into my head growing up in the 90s and 2000s.
Hey, everybody.
That's it. Yeah. Come on. Foster and Partners are just like rubbing their hands together thinking, mate, these, you know, this Saudi government, they're just throwing projects at us. So they must be, you know, earning a nice little bit of mint from this. To me, mate, this seems like another vanity project that probably isn't going to happen. Let's be honest.
I think it's about driving, like I've said before, it's about driving investment and interest. One thing that jumped out to me, and this is obviously, there's a lot of things that jump out to you about this, but one thing was that Foster and Partners, they've done skyscrapers, right? But they're not known for their super tall skyscraper buildings. Whereas the likes of Skidmore, Owings and Merrill, Adrian Smith are much more, you know, in that vein. That's much more what they do. So it's a bit of a surprise that they would be the ones working on this. But the fact that the world's biggest architecture practice are working with Saudi Arabia on a 2 kilometer skyscraper is, I don't know. We're either going to get some renders later this year, or because Saudi are now pulling back and realizing they've got not enough money to build this stuff, they're just going to kill it, not announce it. And this is just one of those little leaked stories that some great journalists, Architects Journal, have got hold of.
I just wanted to say, in Saudi's defense, the Empire State Building was a vanity project, wasn't it? You know, the skyscrapers of 1920s, 1930s New York were vanity projects. So I'm just putting that out there. Obviously, there's the usual spiel of like, oh, you know, we don't agree with this, and Saudi Arabia don't agree with that. Okay, yeah, we get that. But just talking about the news, talking about the topic itself, as much as I think personally, you know, this money, this development can be put into a lot better things for humanity, even within Saudi Arabia. I can still kind of understand why you'd want to build the tallest. You know, there's something in us, isn't there, as humans, to like try and go to the next level, do the next thing. And Saudi want to be that for skyscrapers, even if I do think it's a little bit absurd, right? I'm just trying to think of it from a balanced perspective, right?
Yeah, no, we love a bit of balance, as you know. I think it's an interesting point, Luke, because like you say, the Empire State Building was the tallest building in the world for 40 years. Like a 400-meter building was always out of the question. Now we do 500-meter buildings on a regular basis. There are now several buildings north of 600 meters in that megatall category. Yeah, the megatall category is growing slowly but surely. We've built an 828-meter building in the Burj Khalifa. And the Jeddah Tower, obviously, it didn't happen for political and financial reasons. But a group of engineers, designers, and architects got a design together and started building it. They got ahead to 300 meters. It stopped for other reasons, but the tall buildings, this new frontier, is doable. I'm just not sure if doubling it is feasible.
They have resumed on the Jeddah Tower, haven't they?
Things are remobilizing. So sources that I know, again, ketchup and mayonnaise.
Is this a scoop? Is this a scoop?
Well, this is my contacts in the industry who I can't reveal are saying that tenders are being relet at the moment. So they are getting back up on track with it.
Oh, okay. Mm. It's quite exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Dubai obviously have them like massive fat off hole in the ground with the Dubai Creek Harbour Tower. Do you remember that? You remember the renderings?
Apparently, that might be turned into something else now. They might turn that into like a landscaped garden with a new property thing, right? But I was reading the problem with Dubai Creek Tower is they've sold loads of land and property around it because everyone was very excited for this new anchor building. Then the anchor building isn't there. So the property and stuff they looked at is no longer really as attractive as they said it was going to be. So,
yeah, I remember getting those adverts on like my Instagram being like, invest in Dubai. And it was like these renders of the Dubai Creek Tower. I was like, it's not even built yet, lads. Not even built yet.
Mm.
I don't know, mate. It's more boy who cries wolf, isn't it? All of these renders, all of these projects, Saudi Arabia just throwing money at anything they can see. I don't know, I always use this analogy, like the Saudi Football League, you know, just throwing money at it. It doesn't always equate to the best league, you know. You need more than that. Yep. You know, you need culture. It needs to be more organic, I think.
Mm. I mean, a few things to think about this just from an engineering perspective, like putting aside, should they do it? Can they do it? Like, they were talking about new extremes of engineering here. So extreme foundations, it can be done, but you're talking about some extreme foundations. Wind is one of the biggest problems, like, because the wind force acting on this building, they talk about it in the video, there's kind of like lever action. So the taller your building goes into the sky, the more kind of leverage effect you get on it as wind blows against it. It puts it under a lot more pressure. So yeah, we've done stuff like this before. We've done open floor plates. Think of like 432 Park Avenue has got those open floor plates every 12 floors that let air flow through. Taipei 101's got those sort of very, very intricate detailing on its corners that disrupt wind flow and help, you know, break up air currents hitting the building. Tuned mass dampers, TMDs, as we'd like to call them, is a regular feature in buildings now. So Taipei 101's got a massive one. We show that in the video. There's one in 432 Park Avenue as well. These are those massive weights at the top of the building that basically counteract and steady wind loads swaying a structure. But again, even if you employed all of those things, it's a big ask. I think what's interesting in this is that it's almost certainly going to have a Y-shaped core. So if you look at really tall structures, again, Tokyo Skytree, CN Tower, the Burj Khalifa, what they started building with Jeddah Tower, they've all got that Y-shaped footprint that is basically like a kind of tripod approach for how you build your structure. I would imagine, in fact, I'm almost certain the 2 kilometer skyscraper would have that same sort of footprint.
Mm.
How long does that Y shape go out? Like from the ground, huh?
It's a good question. Like, it's basically like a pyramid. So like the bigger your thing gets, the wider it goes. We did some AI generated images of this building, which we put in the video and we shared on social media as well. You can see with that, like it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and wider and wider and wider. It's a crazy structure. Like, and I think the other point they're making this is, you know, and we've said this with tall buildings before, but the taller you go, the bigger and more robust your core needs to be, and the more lifts, elevators, and services you need in your core. So it gets to the point where you have a building near the top that's mostly core and not a lot floor area. And it's not really that viable because you can't really sell that space. You're just kind of going for height for height's sake rather than economic gain. I don't think they're going for economic benefit here. Yeah, I think the building's going to be big and they'll get economic benefit elsewhere, right?
Yeah, right, precisely. Like when they built the Burj Khalifa, it was more about the buildings that could see the Burj Khalifa, like what you were saying about the Creek Harbour. The property around it goes up in value because they have landmark views, right? World's tallest building views. I can see the appeal is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying not to just be completely anti this news because it is cool to see what we like humans can do, you know, our potential in engineering, in architecture, in construction. But yeah, but mate,
yeah,
next to an airport as well. What? Yeah. What are they thinking? Maybe that's
the excuse. They'll do like a classic, like London and Melbourne, where it's like, oh, it was going to be this big, but now it's going to be 250 meters because it's near an airport.
Maybe,
yeah. Maybe the planes are like, maybe the planes are going to land on top of it, and that's like the new airport.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Helicopters. Or the blimps, like in the Empire State Building.
There you go.
The top of that was designed for blimps, wasn't it? So
yeah. The vertical access question is a massive one because like just getting people in and out of this building, up and down it is crazy. You know, I've just come from a Deca where that's what 680 meters actual building occupied space is about 550, I think, 420. Now, you know, within that, they're talking about 10,000 people being in that building. Up to 10,000 people. So if you times that by three, times it by four, basically, you're on about like 40, 50,000 people inside this building, if depending on what it's used for. Now, conventionally, you'd have a lot of elevators to move those people around. But if you keep doing that, if you keep adding elevators into your core, you end up, as I said, with a massive core and no lettable floor space. So this kind of system that was actually employed at the original World Trade Center towers in New York, where you have express elevators and then local elevators to take you where you need to be and a series of sky lobbies enables you to stack elevator shafts on top of each other. They're also going to, on other tall buildings, they also use double deck elevators, which is a really good way of basically getting more people in one shaft. It's got getting more cars on one motorway lane, if you like. So it gets people up the building faster. But what's interesting, I was chatting to the guys at Medeca and they have like special lifts that can be commandeered during a fire or an emergency to be fire lifts, so they'll keep working during a building fire. You don't have to go down to stairs or anything like that, but they always have to have a fire escape staircase. So I imagine, again, if you built a 2 kilometer skyscraper, you would have dedicated fire lifts that could move people out of the building quickly via lift if there was an emergency. But as a backup, you'd also have to have stairs. So if you're on level, I mean, I don't know, what's level top of this, level 400? You've got to get the stairs down. Yeah, that's where your penthouse apartment doesn't look so rosy.
Right. Do you think we will, in our lifetime, right, let's send the next, or even beyond that, let's send the next, like, 100 years, do you think it's actually feasible for us to build something like this?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Who's going to build it first, do you think?
Well, okay, so it's
put it's 20p feasible. On it. Put
20... How much will that be worth in 100 years?
Power.
It's definitely feasible. It's definitely doable. I think the question of the economics, the funding, the why is what will hold it back, I think. But mankind can do anything, pretty much. We don't. But yeah, it's definitely possible. I don't know.
Maybe that new bad boy skyscraper in Oklahoma is going to give it a run for its money, you know?
Hey, don't knock it. That's progressing now. Don't knock it.
I know it is, mate. I know it is. It's crazy.
Would you go up this 2 kilometer skyscraper in Saudi, Liam?
Yeah, I would. Definitely. I mean, I'd find it super interesting. I can't see why I wouldn't. You know what I mean?
Nice.
I think it's... Yeah, if they can pull it off, if one day if they pull off all this stuff, I will go to Saudi and I'll check out all these projects.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be a great YouTube video, wouldn't it? Like touring Saudi Arabia. Or even if they don't build them, we'll just go touring Saudi Arabia's failed mega projects. Either way, we can't lose.
Exactly. Exactly. We're looking at you, Jeddah Tower. How long do you think, last question from me, how long do you think something like this would actually take to build?
Oh, that's a good question. 4 years and 8 months. If you got Saudi, if you got, I'll just give you a number. If it comes out as that, you owe me like a lot of money. I think Saudi Arabia, if they go for it, will put resources and energy on it. I think the actual construction process isn't that complicated. It's just extreme in terms of where it is. You're basically building a jump core, highly engineered skyscraper. To actually top it out, I don't think it'll take that long.
Really?
Obviously, it's longer than your standard skyscraper because it's double the height of anything else we built before. But it's not going to be like, I don't think it's like decades long. It could become decades long if they have a series of, you know, pandemics and things going bust and corruption purges and money falling and economic downturns. That could prolong it. But if you had a clear run at it with unlimited resources, I reckon you're looking at about 4 years.
Mm. Wow.
Cue engineers around the world, listen to this right now, being triggered, writing in, going, who's this Fred Mills bloke? Don't know what he's talking about.
Oh, it was so good to see the two professionals talk about like the feasibility of something like this, mate. And it's crazy to see, you know, a grown-up Jack Harlow in the video as well. It's a bit an image, isn't it? I was like, this guy related. Like,
yeah, mate. First thing I thought when I watched the video.
Anyway, guys, let us know what you think about this. Are Saudi Arabia actually going to build and finish a 2 kilometer skyscraper? What questions have you got about this project? Can it be built? Should it be built? How would they build it? Get all those coming in over at podcast@theb1m.com. Also in the news this week, we are talking about plans for another skyscraper, although this one much more reasonable. This is a 76-story structure put forward in Manchester in the UK. Now, if approved and constructed, this 241-metre tower developed by Salboy as part of its wider viaduct scheme would take the title of the city's tallest building. It would surpass the 201-metre Deansgate Square South Tower and become the third tallest skyscraper overall in the UK, behind London Shard in first place and the 22 Bishopsgate Tower, also in London, in second place. Not a very exciting building, this one. Bit of a glass box, but notable because it would become the third tallest building in the UK and the tallest building outside of London, Manchester's tallest structure. The idea is this is mostly going to be apartments, so 782 one- and two-bedroom apartments in this tower. And then a smaller adjacent tower is going to have 133 two- and three-bedroom apartments, all of which will meet the local authority's definition of affordable. So you've got affordable, in inverted commas, apartments happening in the smaller tower, and then big, fancy, expensive apartments in the big tower. What do you guys make of this one?
I'm a fan, mate, believe it or not.
Really?
I am a fan. Yeah, I think it's kind of a cool design. It's not too gimmicky. If this were being built in like the Docklands and Canary Wharf, I think we'd be looking at it and going, oh, mate, I think this is all right. It's not like a massive landmark tower, but I think Manchester's still in its relative infancy when it comes to its skyscraper boom. I think there's going to be a lot more to come, mate. A lot more to come.
I reckon it's an eyesore, mate. And if you're going to build the biggest skyscraper outside of London in the country, you need to build something that's visually appealing and a bit authentic.
Authentic? What does that mean?
Authentic is probably not the right word. Just something visually appealing that's, I don't know, that's not just a big glass tower.
Okay. Fred, are you a fan?
Yeah, I'm just stunned that someone who likes the walkie-talkie thinks that is thinks that's an eyesore. I mean, like, what's going on in your head? I yeah, not a fan. I'm not a fan. It's not exciting enough It's a big old glass block. It's big, but not beautiful.
Are you joking, Luke? Are you like pulling?
No, I'm not. I'm not joking. I think it's all right. I think it's decent. I think it's a lot better than some of the other tripe that we've reviewed. Like on, on
this is worse. This is worse than one undershaft.
Mm. No,
easily.
No, it's not. Did you just say easy? It's easily what? No, it's not. On what planet? On what planet?
This planet.
It's
what? The one,
mate,
you're on.
You guys, nah, man, nah. This is.
It's ugly. They've only released one render.
It's got to, I've got to say though, you know, like it's pretty impressive of Manchester, what's happening to this city in a relatively short space of time, like the amount of towers they can build.
Don't get me wrong, the economic growth and the fact they're able to build buildings as big is fantastic. It's great.
Yeah.
But build something better. Come on. It's a landmark for the city. It's the tallest building outside of London. It's another big old glass box.
To me, it kind of looks like one of the, is it the International Finance Center in Hong Kong?
It kind of
looks like that, and I like that building, and that's why, you know, I'm giving it sort of a pass from me. And don't get me wrong, I it's not really like a massive landmark status building, but yeah, I think it's.
Is a landmark status building by being the tallest building in Manchester by a country mile. It has the responsibility to be a landmark building. You can't just have a glass box.
What if, like, 2 years later, another taller building comes?
What if the planet is near in 2 years' time? What if Manchester? You know, there's all sorts of what ifs. You're designing for now. Yeah. You're designing for this context. You can't go, actually, we're gonna not have air conditioning because the planet's gonna get cooler in a few years' time. You're designing for now, the current context. Come on.
You've got to set the standard, right? Like London did, even though I dislike the Gherkin. You started with the Gherkin.
Yeah, true.
And then obviously you've got, you know, London architecture in my mind has gone down since, you know, it was interesting
since
first.
Since the walkie-talkie.
I knew you were going to say it. But now it's like 22 Bishop's Gate. It's like, it's just a big, like, fat thumb. You know what I mean? It's this big, ugly thing in the middle of the city. And if Manchester does it like this, I mean, you know, everyone else is like, oh, cool. We don't have to create cool, interesting, visually appealing buildings. We can just slap up any big glass box and it's all good.
I don't know. My gut says...
You're lying, mate. You're just winding us up.
I'm not lying.
It's all function and no form. That's what it is.
I don't think so. I don't think it is. I think
it's
cool.
Let's see if the comments agree with us in the direction. So starting off with Sam, right? Big old fan, Sam. We love Sam. He says, not a fan at all. Just one more boring glass box to go with all the others. I know icons disappear like the Gherkin, but this is brazenly overshadowing the Beetham Tower, which is pretty iconic in the city. There you go. Well said, Sam. Mm. Someone else saying One Canada Square is going to be really mad if this one goes ahead. That is true, because One Canada Square, that is the big old tower at Canary Wharf in the UK with the pyramid on top, will be bumped down from third place to fourth place. For balance, someone else saying, I like the new glass you've used. Nice job, everyone. Evolving Skyline of Manchester is magnificent.
Yes, so quite a mix. Yeah.
Well,
I think you need to put a poll on this.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, right.
I think you'd be surprised. I think more people like this than you think.
Another chap here saying Manchester is just one cluster of glass blocks at this point. There you go.
Balance. Oh, what, like every major city on the planet?
But that's not right. Ooh. Just because every other city is mundane glass blocks doesn't mean you should do it too. You should embrace individuality and uniqueness. Stand out from the crowd.
I agree. But there's clearly a vision for something greater than this. Like the pace Manchester's putting out these towers. I don't think this is designed to be their Empire State Building. This isn't designed to be their Shard. You know, that's
surely we need more from our architects and designers than to not try and aspire to be a great building, just to put up something. Like, surely you should aspire to inspire people.
No,
you
not
create
always.
Something that shapes your society, shapes your community. What do you mean, not always?
Not always. No, no. There's a time and a place. There's a time and a place. If every single building's doing that, if every single building's
every
doing
building
that,
made a positive impact on our society, our communities, and inspired people, and made a difference to the shape of our cities, you're saying that's a bad thing.
That's not real life, is it? Like, that's not, like, yeah, say that, that's, it's just not real life.
It's
like,
not real life, not, but it should be.
Not every building.
It should
not,
be.
Oh, it should be. No. Not every building can be a Beyonce. You need some Kelly Rowlands, yeah? You need.
Well, this is Michelle. I have to say this.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, you can't, not every building can or should be a superstar, iconic, wow. And this stuff is being thrown around left, right, and center. It's exactly why we get so much absolute tripe and tosh in the architecture world nowadays. That's what I think, anyway.
I think young architects listening to this should aspire to create something that is impressive, bold, different, and makes a difference to the world and inspires people and shapes lives in a positive way. Don't throw up glass tripe just because your client wants you to.
You can say that, Fred. You sounded like Liam and I had a laugh about the marketing spiel of some of these buildings last week. It just sounds like that. People don't buy it, man. Like, you know, it's a skyscraper. It's for rich people, you know, or inspire. But no. Don't get it twisted, lads. This is a box for rich people, yeah? I think there's got to be a little bit more meat in the middle. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I need to rethink my, you know, thoughts on this. But what a conversation, though, eh? Manchester's.
Let's take it to the country. Let's take the vote to the country. Let's dissolve Parliament and call an election. We're going to put a poll out on this, guys. Love it or hate it. It is going to be up on the B1M social media this week. So, yeah, we'll report back to you with results in the next podcast, definitely. Now, also in the news this week, we are swinging over to New York City, where the Vessel is due to reopen later this year. So it's been announced now that the Vessel will reopen later in 2024. You remember, this is the structure designed by Heatherwick Studio, a sort of honeycomb lattice structure designed by Heatherwick Studio that basically anchors Hudson Yards. New tourist attraction, kind of like a vertical stepwell type thing, rising in the middle of Hudson Yards. I don't know how else to describe it. Have I kind of conveyed that right, Luke, do you think?
Yeah, kind of. I don't even think they know how they would describe it, to be honest, mate. So
no, the link is in the podcast description, guys. If you're listening along and you don't know what this looks like, have a click on the link. We've got some pictures up there for you guys to go and have a look at on our social media. This is $260 million, which is obviously a very expensive thing because it's New York City. First opened in 2019, but then closed in 2021 after several people tragically died by suicide at the structure. What they've now done is installed floor-to-ceiling steel safety mesh across the upper levels and closed the top level entirely. So they've basically adapted the structure in a way that I think is going to be quite careful. There's no picture of this yet, but it looks like it's going to be pretty carefully done. Obviously, pretty sad this has happened. It's pretty sad that they didn't foresee this. But yeah, they're now trying to get it reopen again so that people can enjoy it in some way.
Yeah, I you know, with this project, I've always wondered, I understand it's like an art installation, but just what's at the top? What are you looking at? Is there a good view? I'm not that familiar with New York. I'm not familiar with that area at all. And I've always just wondered, like, what do you do at the top of this thing?
Observation, isn't it? It's like someone was told, like, to build something that's going to inspire, you know, inspire people. And it's like, right, okay, but what, you know, what does that mean? What, you know, what does that actually?
It's designed.
It's a gimmick. It's gimmicky, I think.
It's designed for Instagram.
It's designed for Instagram. Yeah, great point. It looks really cool, though.
They want you just to come down, have a look, take a picture. Go on it and upload your picture saying you're at Hudson Yards. And I have to say, I went to Hudson Yards because I obviously followed the architectural development. I was quite interested in just going and checking it out. I also went because I really wanted to see the Vessel. If the Vessel wasn't there, I probably could have given Hudson Yards a miss. So it does a job of, but again, you shouldn't have to pull people to a new community. This should be a natural pull. This goes to the heart of you know, stuff like that. But yeah, made for Insta.
Yeah, I don't know, mate. And with the mesh that's now there, it kind of isn't. It takes away from what the design of the structure is kind of meant to be.
Yeah,
would you say?
It does, and I think it obviously tarnishes it. I think naturally it is tarnished now anyway.
Yeah,
I know there's been lots of statements from the developer, from related companies, which is the sort of the company that owns the Hudson Yards site and develops it, and also from Heatherwick Studio saying, you know, they're devastated and saddened by what's happened. They're working on a new design, but it does beg the question: like, surely you could have seen this coming. Surely, like a high edge like that with just a handrail. Yeah, I know you have them in shopping centres and, you know, airports and stuff, but not quite at this height and not quite in such a prominent place. You know, when you go up top of the Empire State, that's fully netted in and enclosed. It's the same thing now on the Golden Gate Bridge. It's the same thing on the edge at Hudson Yards. You go up there, yes, there's, you know, glass that's almost like twice as high as you are.
It's once again the disconnect between some designers, some architects,
yeah,
and people.
Yeah.
There's a massive disconnect, mate.
This could have been fully glass enclosed, couldn't it? You could raise the glass height or make it fully glass enclosed.
Oh yeah. Make it a big old greenhouse. People love it.
Yeah, a few comments on this one. So Brian saying, sorry, but how the hell did it even get through the planning stage? I would have immediately thought of those at risk to themselves with such a structure. I feel for those families who've lost loved ones and the individuals who are able to take their own lives. So, yeah, good point from Brian. Another one here from Matthew Shirker. He says, the vessel is a super cool piece of engineering, especially the elevator. But overall, the vessel has been a huge disappointment for me. Hudson Yards is a missed opportunity on urban planning. A mega mall, a driveway, and public art installation that needs to be heavily guarded are all things that don't make a public space welcoming. Mm. Well said.
Well said. Well said. Very well said.
Mm.
Yeah.
Spot on. So yeah, bit of a sad story, that one, but interesting to see how it's going to unfold in the future. Just to say, if you have been affected by any of the issues we talked about here, you can learn more and get support through the B1M and Procore's Get Construction Talking initiative. There are also several mental health charities and construction mental health charities around the world. We list those and provide links to support over at getconstructiontalking.org. Swinging over to the email inbox, Luke, what have you got for us this week?
Right, we got an email from a gentleman that wishes to remain anonymous.
Oh, this bodes well.
I know. Well, I've got their name here. They've just requested an email. Please keep me anonymous. So they go, hello, Fred, Luke, and Liam. First, please keep my name confidential. Second, love the podcast. It's great material for the gym, especially with inspiration from Muscle Man Mills. How about that?
I didn't write this. I just want to say right now,
I don't know. Well, this person just goes on to say, I wanted to draw your guys' attention to the Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts in Orlando, Florida, as a potential story to cover. It's been a multi-year saga of funding issues, legal drama surrounding a really cool building. And he sent us an article. Keep up the great work. P.S. The Faroe Islands video was a masterpiece. Nice little email there, mate. Dr. Phillips Center for Performing Arts. Have you had a little cheeky Google of that, or did you know about it, Fred?
I didn't know about it because it's a municipal building in Orlando.
Right.
It doesn't normally quite fit the prestige of the B1M, but I like this guy. he's complimented me. I've Googled it. Nice building.
It's nice looking theatre. Yeah, I was going to say, Fred, I don't know. This is quite impressive, mate. Like,
architecture,
you know,
in Orlando. Who knew?
Yeah. Well, while Miami is sinking, you know, everyone's going to be moving to Orlando, aren't they? So. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, anonymous person. We like this. We'll have a look at it. We will see if there's a story there. But yeah, it does sound quite interesting. We'll definitely have a look. Give it a go. Mm. Yeah.
Fred, first time we've caught up about me being on the Brightline as well, mate.
How was your Brightline experience?
What an experience, mate. Orlando to Miami. That's what you want to do. Get the train. get the train. Well, the actual train itself, like just over 3 hours or something. I didn't really notice. You just turn up, get on the train, and, you know, compared to flying, oh, it's a no-brainer. It is a no-brainer. Yeah, yeah, loved it, mate.
America's high-speed rail revolution there, guys. It's on its way.
Yeah, yeah.
All about the bright eye.
Yeah.
Well, guys, let us know what you thought about today's episode. If you've got any questions about that 2 kilometer skyscraper, the big old ugly block in Manchester, or the vessel in New York, get your comments coming in. podcast@theb1m.com. I liked your Let's Go last week, Liam, by the way.
What did I do? I didn't hold it. My mate, someone messaged me, like, why didn't you hold the go?
It's how it said.
Let's go. Because I didn't hold the O.